Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Matt Snyder, and he'll be answering your most important questions on wild wipers on the fly. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed of future shows. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Matt Snyder about wild wipers on the fly. Our approach is simple: education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like shortline nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's www.flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. Before we introduce Matt, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Look for the link under Matt's section that says click here to register for the drawing. Click on that link, fill in the form, and we'll announce the winners for the drawing at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away Chad Shields Bass Streamer Pro Fly Box, which includes 4 Mad Mud Dog Salamanders, 4 Shield Shiners, 2 Deep Swimming Frogs, 2 Sugar Daddy Craws, and 2 Producers, 14 flies in all. These flies are great for largemouth bass and smallmouth bass. You can see his patterns at www.emergefishing.com, along with some great underwater videos he's recently posted there in his video library. So here's how you can win that box set of flies. Must be the first person at the end of the show to answer the question we'll ask about something we've talked about during the show. So you'll need to submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage, the same place that you can ask questions during the show. The first person that correctly answers by submitting through that text box wins the box set of flies. So be there and do your best to win. Our guest tonight is Matt Snyder. Matt Snyder, founder and co-owner of www.fishexplore.com, is an avid fly fisherman and goes after many fish willing to eat his flies. I should say any fish willing to eat his flies. With tiger muskie, pikes, blake, and carp over 30 inches, wiper, walleye, salmon, trout over 20 inches, largemouth and smallmouth bass over 17 inches, and crappie over 14 inches. Matt claims only to have perfected the persistence needed to succeed in taking warm water species on the fly. Catching every species Colorado has to offer on the fly is one of his many goals. Matt holds the state catch and release record for splake and has logged thousands of miles driving across Colorado researching, fishing, camping, and boating. Matt appears for sporting shows and regional fish club meetings to promote and teach the intricacies of fly fishing for warm water species. In 2008, Matt was a key presenter at the International Sportsman's Expo, as well as the Larimer County Fishing and Boating Expo. In addition to his writings on the Internet, Matt also pens a weekly fishing column in the Fort Collins, Coloradoan, and dabbles in fishing videos for the Internet. Matt writes ongoing blogs throughout the year, chronicling his experiences in his everyday fishing and fish business life. He's logged over 100 blogs and has written over 10 articles published on Fish Explorer related to warm water fly fishing and core fishing competencies. Matt, thanks for joining us on Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, thanks for having me.
Well, is it pouring rain up there where you are? Because it sure is here.
It was earlier. I'm pretty glad that it stopped because we got some pretty serious lightning strikes close to the house. I actually had to shut down and take a break for a little while.
Yeah,
we're all clear.
It's down here now.
So, I would actually prefer to be fishing in these conditions, honestly, but it's bad.
Folks, if we do lose the show tonight, you'll know what's going on because I'm experiencing thunder showers here. Matt's about an hour north of me here in Colorado, so hope the lines hold up and that we can continue through the show. So we'll do our best. Okay. Well, Matt, let's start with talking about Wiper, the fish itself, because a lot of the questions that were written in, for instance, JB in Shenandoah Valley, Virginia says, what the heck is a Wiper and why have I never heard of about this fish? And then Mike McEwen in South Africa says, what are these fish? Are they saltwater that lives in freshwater? Or are they true freshwater species? So I think there's a lot of people that don't even know what a Wiper is. So let's start there. What is a Wiper?
Yeah, that's the question I get most of the time. You know, here in Colorado, in this region, we refer to them as Wipers most commonly. They're also known as a palmetto bass or a hybrid striped bass or hybrid striper, also called the sunshine bass. It's a hybrid mix between a striped bass and a white bass. It was originally developed sometime in the 60s, I believe, in South Carolina with female striper eggs with a male white bass, and now that's reversed. They were developed to ease up some of the harvesting in the striped bass populations on the coast, but they're used primarily for to control or keep in check bait fish populations, such as shad, like gizzard shad and threadfin shad. And for future reference, when I refer to shad in this interview, I'm referring to gizzard shad. That's what we find mostly here in Colorado. I'm not talking about American shad or like the show you had at one point about fishing for this American shad. These are gizzard shad, and they're voracious feeders, these wipers are. They have some of the greatest characteristics of both fish. They're extremely hard-fighting fish. They have what they call a hybrid vigor that makes them a lot meaner than either of these fish. They have the size in between white bass and stripers. Stripers, you know, can get up 60 pounds or so. White bass typically down around 4 or 5, 6 pounds max. Wipers, the world record wiper is right around 27 pounds, just over 27 pounds. And we catch them regularly in the upper single digits, you know, from 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 10, 11, 12 pounds. If you get in some really big fish, they're in 15 pounds. Very few fish over 15 pounds, but there's definitely been some caught. Here in Colorado, I believe it was 26 pounds, 15 ounces, caught on a fly a few years ago. So they grow big, and they take flies and bait readily, just like white bass would. They're schooling fish. The way you differentiate them, when you're on the water, if you're in a water that has stripers and white bass and wipers, you can tell the difference between the best way that I can tell. A lot of people say that wipers have some broken lines because they have stripes down the side of their body. And that's true in most cases. The best way to tell, besides doing DNA testing, is to look at their tongue. And in the back of their tongue, they have a tooth patch. And if there's a split in that tooth patch, then that represents a hybrid fish. So when I refer to wiper, I'm talking about these varieties by different names, palmetto bass, hybrid striper, sunshine bass, and also it's called white rock bass in some places.
Okay, so you're saying that you can't find wipers, white bass, and stripers in the same piece of water?
I'm sure you can somewhere. Not in Colorado. You can find white bass and wiper in the same body's water. And I'm mostly talking about, and I fish mostly impoundments, so I fish lakes and reservoirs here in Colorado. You can also find across the U.S. some places where you can fish them in rivers. And you can find some here in Colorado as well, fishing inlets where they run up and they do a false spawn. And I say false spawn because these are sterile fish, or mostly sterile fish. There's been some studies done that show that they can cross back with their parent species, so they can mate with a white bass or a striper if the conditions exist for that. But they typically don't reproduce together. So they're a controllable species. So when the management of a lake, of a fishery, stocks wiper in order to control the bait fish, they know that that bait fish has a limited run. They're going to die off eventually.
What happens to the wipers then?
Well, they run their lifespan, which is 5 to 10 years generally.
Okay.
So they'll put them in there for a purpose, and they'll clean it up, and they'll either continue stocking them or they'll cease the program.
When we were talking earlier, you were talking about the wipers being now considered, rather than a cleanup fish, more of a sport fish, and that they were being stocked for that purpose as well, right?
Yeah, and I'd love to see that more. They're getting a lot more popularity for sport fishing as opposed to just a pure controlling fish. And it's always been a mix of both, but I'd like to see it lean more towards the sport fishing. Here in Colorado, for most of the lakes, there's a 10-limit possession for wipers. And so you could go there with your buddy and come out with a stringer of 20 wipers, really nice-sized wipers. And it's tough for me to see that, but I'd like to have some of those limits strengthened in more favor of sport fishing.
Mm-hmm. So you say people are keeping them, must be keeping them because they taste good. Are they good eating?
That's good. You're asking the wrong guy.
Okay.
I think it drives my family
always
crazy.
Always catch and release, huh?
Yes, some of them who are probably listening now, my family. I fish all the time, they know that, but I don't eat fish. Every once in a while I'll bring home a crappie or something for my wife to cook up if she cleans it and cooks it that night. But otherwise, I don't eat fish, don't like the taste, so I'd be the wrong person. But I've heard that they do taste good. I guess they taste like any other fish, as long as it comes from good water.
Well, how
would
you
good
know?
Eating. Yeah, exactly, I don't know.
Okay. What about, okay, we've got them here in Colorado. I know they're in several other states in the U.S. Where all do they range and in the U.S.? And also, are they, you know, if they're in other countries as well?
You know, outside of the United States, I'm not sure. I've done a little bit of research and I haven't found much. I'd love if anybody's listening to this outside of the United States and knows about good hybrid striped bass fishing. I'd love to hear about it. I've done a little bit of research in the United States about other states. They're pretty much all over the United States where they have developed good populations, where they're actually keeping state records. I have a list going based on that. And out east, that's Delaware has, I think, one pond. You've got some in Georgia, Kentucky, North Carolina, New Jersey, New York, South Carolina, West Virginia. Up north in the Midwest, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Wisconsin, down south, Alabama, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma. Up, you know, around here, Colorado, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Mississippi, Nebraska, Nevada, Oklahoma, Utah. And out west, I believe Oregon has some. And that's just based on preliminary research that I've done for our website, which is primarily for Colorado at this point, but we're going to be starting to expand. And, of course, I'm going to start expansion with wiper, good wiper, and hybrid striped bass waters.
So it sounds like I heard you say all the way from Mississippi up to Michigan and Wisconsin. So it seems to tolerate a wide range of temperatures.
Yeah, and, that's one of the benefits of the fish is that they can withstand different water temperature ranges more so than a striper.
Now, are they seasonal in that, you know, I mean, here we fish in Colorado almost all year long, but do they have a particular season where they're easier to catch? Or?
They are seasonal, and that plays more into finding them. You know, I think you can catch these fish year-round. You can catch them probably through the ice. I don't do a whole lot of ice fishing, but you can probably catch them through the ice right through the dog days of summer, kind of what we're going through right now, where we've had a stretch of how many 90-plus degree days, as we have 20 or 24, something like that. And we can still find them now. And you can even find them shallow. They are, they're across the U.S., and I'm probably missing some states that they're in. That's preliminary data. That's based on some incomplete research that I've done, but I know those states have programs.
When we say, you know, you had mentioned the seasonal aspect of it and the idea of the heat playing a role there, is there a particular temperature that they can tolerate or enjoy?
Well, it goes like this. This is, and I'll be talking a little bit about finding the fish, and that's really the main game. Early in the spring, they seem to be more dispersed. When water temperatures get over 45 degrees on the surface, I'll start fishing for them. Fishing a little bit slower at that time, slower metabolism, but they're still on the move, and they're still eating. The game's a little bit different because you're searching in different places. When the water temperature gets over 50 degrees, maybe the low 50s up until low 60s, that's kind of prime. I like fishing those periods because they're a little bit easier to access with a fly, and their metabolism's up, and they really rip off some line. When the water temperatures get up above 63 on up, they move deeper, and they're a little bit harder to access. But they're still accessible. They're still fighting really hard, and I think somewhere around 80 degrees, their metabolism slows down. And then towards fall, when it starts getting back to 50 degrees, there's a different way of finding them at that point. And then moving into winter, they kind of take up probably a slower movement, and it's, again, a different way of finding them from that point on.
Okay.
And so as far as seasonal goes, they will go through a fall spawn, like I mentioned, at some preferred water temperature, varies lake by lake. They will actually run up into inlets. And the funny thing is they'll also stage at dams. So on the downriver side of a lake, you'll find them in spawning mode or false spawn mode.
Okay. Mike McEwen in South Africa asks, do they interfere with any other species in their habitats? By the way, Mike was going to try to listen tonight. It's 3 a.m. in South Africa for him. So, Mike, if you're on, God bless you.
Yeah,
if you're not, we understand. So, do they interfere with any other of the sport fish or anything that you can tell?
They interfere with baitfish populations. Gizzard shad, threadfin shad, alewives. They're usually stocked in a lake that has really healthy populations of those species. If those species dwindle, then they have an impact on some of the other fish, and they will turn to fry. And, you know, small yearling fish or subclass fish. And that doesn't happen a whole lot because they can control it. If these lakes are managed correctly, they're only put in lakes to do a certain job, and they usually keep track of that. Here in Fort Collins, we have Horsetooth Reservoir, which had a really great wiper program going in the late 90s. That's when I first started getting into them. And then they had a baitfish population crash, and I believe it was rainbow smelt. And they've now reestablished a gizzard shad population in Horsetooth, but at that time when there were plenty of wipers and not enough forage base or prey base, then it started causing a problem in that ecosystem. So the stocking program at Horsetooth probably will not get going again. The fish that you find in there are very few and far between, but they're really big. It's a big reservoir. I don't go up there looking for them often, but every year I see them at least once, and they're good 15-pound fish or greater. They do have an impact on a fishery if there's not enough prey base in the form of gizzard shad or other baitfish schools like that.
Yeah, so they'll start feeding on the largemouth fry or panfish or those kinds.
That's pretty uncommon to see just because of the reason they stock them in the first place is to control those, and they tend to keep a good eye on them.
Yeah. Now, we have a question from Charles Sox in Maryland, and he wanted to know if the wipers could be stocked in a small farm pond.
They actually
they need a large body of water.
No, they can be in pretty small ponds as long as it doesn't winter kill, as long as there's a good forage base for them. They're actually farmed for food in many places. I've read somewhere that they're actually farmed in Taiwan and Israel.
Oh.
That's one version. Those typically aren't fishable waters. You know, I fish for a wiper in lakes as small as about 50 acres. I know Nebraska has some smaller lakes that hold wiper. I know there's some private lakes in Colorado that hold wiper. The impoundment does not need to be huge as long as it supports the prey base.
Okay. Good. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Matt about wipers on the fly. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop has an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. Again, 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Matt Snyder about wild wipers on the fly. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box on our homepage to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we're going to try to answer as many of them on the show as possible tonight. Matt, why don't you just take a minute here and tell us about your website and what you do in the fly fishing world as far as your business.
Well, I don't know if I can do that in a minute, but I'll try. fishexplorer.com has been kind of a labor of love for the last 2.5 years. I developed it. It's based in Colorado, and we focus on lakes, lake fishing. It's got a broad audience. It's not just fly fishing, but myself and David Colson, our field editors, on there, and we go after all sorts of species on the fly, and we write about it. There's blogs and articles. We have an active forum that can be cross-referenced with the different lakes that we feature on our maps, as well as, you know, each lake has its own detail page. So we have a Google Maps of the lake showing the boat ramps and the campgrounds and related blogs and related articles and related forum posts and stocking data. And we do the main reason I started the website, besides doing the Google Maps feature to show where lakes are based on what species they have in them and what boating you can do at each one. It's also to keep track of water temperatures and water levels and other pertinent conditions, such as road closures or wind factors, those kinds of things, so that you know when you get to a lake that you haven't fished for a while, what the water temperatures, you can kind of gauge your plan based on some of the conditions that we focus on. We don't focus necessarily on fishing reports. It's more about the conditions so that you can go there and figure out on your own what to do. So that way, if you're spin fishing or fly fishing or whatever, you can go figure it out. That is Fish Explorer in a nutshell, and we're looking to start getting out of Colorado and start expanding into Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, and start picking up some other lakes and get some more people involved from neighboring states anyway to begin with.
Great, great. And that's primarily warm water fishing.
Primarily, but it's all lakes right now. And
okay.
We do have a lot of trout in the lakes, especially stock rainbow trout. But there's a lot of cutthroats, cutbows, brown trout, and other exotic strains of trout. Primarily, the website is focused on warm water fishing. We, Dave and I, primarily focus on warm water fly fishing for all sorts of things, from carp to catfish, wiper, tiger muskie, pike, all the way to trout.
Great, great. And what's your website name? URL again.
The URL is www.fishexplorer.com.
Okay.
Fish Explorer is all one word, explorer.
Okay.
.com.
All right, folks, so you can go visit that. I'm sure there's things, even if you're not in Colorado, you can learn from that website about warm water fishing that could possibly help them wherever they are, right?
Yeah, in fact, there's 3 articles that would probably interest listeners on this show that are specifically about wiper fly fishing. And in text, those will have pretty much everything that we discuss here today about finding wiper, presenting to wiper, and the different seasonal patterns.
Terrific, terrific. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about what wiper eat. And we already know shad, the primary food source. Do they eat anything else that we would need to be concerned about from a fly fishing standpoint?
Yeah, well, I'd say shad, it's referring to any bait fish, whatever forage base is in a particular lake or river is what they focus on. Obviously, when they're really little, they're plankton eaters. And when they get big enough to eat fry and bait fish, they'll eat those. They grow really fast. They will also eat crayfish, so make a distinction between the most common trait in wipers to follow baitfish schools, but you also find some scavengers that are looking for crayfish and other things along the bottom. They're kind of more an opportunistic feeder. That's why you see some people sitting on lawn chairs with their rods stuck in rod holders, fishing mussels on the bottom. They tend to pick up these scavenger fish.
Okay.
But we primarily, for flies, concentrate on baitfish imitations and in finding the baitfish schools. Now, they most likely also eat insects. I don't ever try fishing for them with insects, but I'm sure that's possible. If somebody listening has done that effectively, I'd love to hear about it. It's just one of those things that I don't take the time to do.
Right, right. Well, you go after what they like best, and that provides the best opportunity, I assume, as well.
Right.
We have Frank in Lanceville, British Columbia, wants to know then, could you please describe the flies that you use to catch wipers, and do you use any special flies?
Okay, well, here's where I make it simple. It's the top three flies are clousers, and then clousers, and clousers, in no particular order.
Okay.
I fish a lot of clousers. 90% of the time I'm fishing clousers. Now, you can go with any bait fish imitation, but I take a clouser and I tie it up in different patterns. Pretty much stick to a gray and white. I'll mix in olive and white. I'll mix in blue and white. I'll mix the blue with the gray just to make a contrast. But I tie them dense, and I'll tie them sparse, and I'll tie them with flash. And those are pretty much the three varieties that I use. But deceivers, you know, any other kind of streamer like that, when you're imitating bait fish, as long as it's got some white and gray, as long as it looks like a shad, that's really what matters. Now, they are picky about their size. So if they're keyed in on a school of shad and those shad are 3 inches, you're going to be doing a lot better by fishing a 3-inch imitation of a shad. And I experiment with that. I'll talk about that later. But size is really important. To me, and I go back and forth on this, but to me, color is not so much an issue. Some people swear by chartreuse and white. You know, I think that's great. You know, olive and white or gray and white, it doesn't matter. I think as long as you're using these flies as tools and you're getting to where the fish are and you're presenting to these fish, it doesn't so much matter. You're going to catch them. If you can find them, that's the whole game is finding them. It doesn't matter so much what you're using. Now, if you're fishing, like I describe in one of my articles about how we find these pods of carp early season, I think it was a few years ago, we're fishing in February, when it was really warm in February, and we had water temperatures in the low 40s, and we went out looking for wiper, found these pods of carp in a flats where the water was the warmest, and we fished around those pods of carp with olive buggers with twisty tail. I forget the name of it off the top of my head, but it's essentially a crayfish pattern, and we found wiper keying in on these pods of carp. And I think what they're doing is they're just being opportunistic. They're finding all the aquatic life that was coming out of that mud that the carp were stirring up. And we got into quite a few wiper doing that. So crayfish patterns for that situation and for scavenging fish. I like patterns that ride hook up. That's why I fish a clouser most of the time, is with the dumbbell eyes. It causes the hook point to ride up. And I fish all my crayfish patterns with the hook point riding up. And that prevents it from hooking on the bottom when I'm fishing down deep, close to the bottom. It also makes it fairly weedless when you're fishing weed edges to bring it through the weeds. As long as you're not jerking it around too wildly, you can bring it through weeds pretty good, and it won't get hung up.
What size and type of hook do you usually use?
I use the strongest hooks that you can find because these guys are going to bend your hook. And we haven't touched on that yet. That's the whole reason that I'm hooked on wiper fishing, is because they're the strongest fish available here and in most places besides saltwater fishing. And you need strong hooks or they're going to straighten them out on you. I use
so
PMCO.
You use saltwater?
What's that?
You use saltwater hooks then?
Yes. I use mainly TMCO 811S. That's a stainless hook. And it's really strong. It can be brittle if you bend it the wrong way, but it's really strong otherwise. And I use that in mostly a size 4, size 2, up to maybe even a size 6, depending on which size clouser I'm tying.
Right.
The other thing that we'll get into that I don't do as much because I don't find myself in this situation often for busting fish, and this is when, you know, striper fishermen are familiar with this, when they are herding a school of bait fish and they're pushing them up to the surface or into a pocket and they create this feeding frenzy. You can often fish just right on top of them, right in the surface. So big poppers and big flies that ride in the surface. Like a Papafix banger is one of my favorite topwater flies, crease flies, and Rainey's bubblehead is another one because you can strip that a little faster and it rides up through the hole on the top of that fly. Any kind of topwater fish, but the bigger, the better as far as topwater flies go.
Okay. Going back a little bit here to color combinations and water conditions, Martin Coleman, Lawrence, Kansas, asked about that. Do you favor certain color combinations? And I know you mentioned flash on the flies as well. And you just talked about a shallow water situation with crayfish. So if you're fishing deeper or cloudy water, do you change up your fly accordingly in any particular way?
Yeah, whatever technique I'm using, I change up my fly based on that. If I'm fishing fast or if I'm fishing in clear water and I'm fishing relatively fast, I'm going to fish a more streamlined clouser pattern, one that's not as dense.
Okay, so kind of less sparsely tied, is that what you're...
Exactly.
Okay.
Fewer fibers to keep it floating, and it gives it more of a translucent appeal. If I'm fishing water with poor clarity, I'll go with a denser tide pattern with more fibers. It'll push more water and appeal to their lateral line more. If I'm fishing deep or a slower retrieve and in clear water, I want that fly to have some life on a pause. So if I'm going strip, 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 pause, and I'm letting it drop, I want to have that fly appeal to those fish. So having flash, having some synthetic fibers in it that wave while it's dropping, that will give it life and attract fish. The other thing is when I'm fishing deep like that, when I want the fly to sink, a sparser tide fly with less bucktail will let it sink faster. And you can vary the pattern based on how fast you want it to sink. I want it to match up with the line that I'm sinking, and I'll talk about those later. I'm fishing mostly a sink tip shooting head that's sinking at X number of inches per second. And if I'm dropping it down through a school, I want that fly to be dropping at a similar rate, maybe a little faster, to keep the fly in touch with the line and in touch with me. Otherwise, you develop a bow in your leader, and you might miss a fish because they might take it and spit it out before you know it.
Okay.
But as far as colors go, like I said before, I'm not really big into color patterns. I'm more into contrast. So to me, it doesn't matter so much whether what color it is, whether you have pink in there, whether you have red or whatever. As long as there's contrast, that's the most important thing. You want this fish to be able to pick it up, and at various depths and different types of water clarity, you want these fish to be able to see it. At different times of day, they see certain colors better. So you want at least there to be some contrast. That's the most important thing to me.
Okay. Any tips you have on tying these clousers? Anything you do different than standard
pattern? Use strong thread. I use rod winding thread. I've experimented a little bit with some silk-type threads that are really, really strong, but they spin. So you end up, the fly will spin, the head will spin. Even if you put some super glue on the dumbbell eyes, everything tends to spin a little bit more with that silk. I break some of the lighter threads, so I use rod winding thread. And I really crank down on this bucktail and really secure everything to the hook real tight. And when you're tying the dumbbell eyes on, one of the tricks that I've picked up from somewhere and I use all the time is when you end up figurating over the dumbbell that you're tying on top of the hook shank, and before you're done, you end up wrapping around the base of that figure eight to cinch everything down. Take a few more wraps to secure that down, and then you can put a drop of head cement or super glue on it to make sure that it stays on top of the hook shank. start off being sparse. Don't go too heavy, but experiment. I have 100 causers in my box, and some of them are chewed up, and some of them aren't used yet. But I have a variety of density of flies, and they're pretty much all the same colors, but they vary in size and density of fibers.
Okay. All right. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll kind of finish up with the flies and start talking about equipment, and then we'll talk strategies and tactics. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide walk wade and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com or call 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Matt Snyder about wild wipers on the fly. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. And use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Now, okay, so we've talked quite a bit about flies. Is there anything that we've missed that we need to still talk about, Matt, about flies?
I don't think so. I just want to clarify the title, Wild Wipers on the Fly. They're wild in that they're crazy,
yeah.
But they're not, they don't reproduce in the wild as, you know, you would say wild trout.
They're
a sterile fish and a very strong fish.
Yeah, well, that's what the title meant, was wild. Wild on the end of that line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about line, rods, reels, and so forth. What size rod do you recommend for wipers? What do you use?
Well, I carry mostly a 6-weight and an 8-weight. That's what I have rigged up mostly for wiper. That's with my sinking line. So I'll talk a little bit about the lines that I fish most often. I use Rio density compensated shooting head sink tips. It's a 24-foot sink tip section followed by a floating running line. I use 150 grain and a 300 grain version of that, and I have the 150 grain on my 6-weight, 300 grain on my 8-weight. And those accomplish a lot for me. The reason I fish these is because you can make really long casts really quick. And when you're in the spring, most of the time when I'm fishing for wiper, it's all about covering water. And I want to be able to do that as effectively and efficiently as possible. And these allow for that. You don't make a whole lot of false casts using these. If you do, you probably end up whacking yourself in the back of the head, which I think you did on my boat once, didn't you?
No, that wasn't me. That was some other guy.
Okay, I get you. The idea with these lines is you can strip in, you flip a little bit of line out in front of you, take you're using a double haul, so you're shooting line behind you. Take a strong double haul back, or haul back, and you shoot line behind you, and you let that out, and then you grab it, and you haul, and you shoot it forward, and you can shoot out most of the line, to the 90 to 100 foot line, in one fell swoop like that. These are sink tip lines, and I can still fish high in the column with that 150 grain. If I'm fishing fast and I start retrieving right away, I can keep that fly, even if it's a weighted clouser, up in the top 1 to 2 feet of the water column. If I need to get down deeper, I'll fish a 300 grain, and I'll be able to effectively fish 5, 10, 15 feet deep with that line. The rods are just used to match up to those lines. And it's important that your rod have some backbone, because these fish are rod breakers. More rods have been broken by these fish than, I don't know, as far as freshwater species go, maybe any fish. You need to be able to turn fish if they're not over 6 or so pounds. You can typically turn them at will, but even though they're strong fish, if you've got an 8-weight or a 6-weight with a strong backbone, you can get control of these fish. If you don't, you're going to be pretty well into your backing. So it needs to be a strong rod, one that's not going to snap on a big fish. Doesn't mean you can't take your trout rod out there and fish for them. The benefit of using a fly rod against these fish is that it has a more bend and more give than your typical rod. So if a spin fisherman goes out there and has a pretty stiff, short rod, chances are greater to break line on those than a long, supple, even though it's got a good backbone, fly rod.
What about reels? Anything in particular you look for in a reel?
Reels, I'm kind of in the group of people that look at reels and look at them as line holders. But, you know, that being said, viper are obviously very strong fish, and it's great to have a good drag system. A lot of times if you can turn a fish, if they're under, well, say, 8 pounds, you can turn a fish and you can hand strip them in as long as you're careful doing it and you give to them when they're making strong runs. If you get into a heavier fish, they're going to play it and they don't even care that you're there, in which case they'll snap line up to the reel, so you don't even have to get them on the reel. They'll put themselves on the reel, and that's when a good drag and a large arbor reel that allows you to recover line more quickly come into play. And if these fish start running back at you, you better be ready. And that's why reeling up on a large arbor reel is beneficial. So having a good drag and a large arbor reel is pretty important. If you don't, I wouldn't keep that or prevent you from going out and fishing for these fish. Just know that it might be a little more difficult to play them and land them on a smaller reel.
Okay. Mike in Cedar City, Utah asked about which would be your all-around fly line. You already mentioned the sinking tip shooting heads. So that's your primary line, it sounds like, that you use. Do you use other floating or intermediate at times?
Well, when I go with a floating line, any standard weight-forward floating line matched up on a 6-weight or an 8-weight rod or somewhere around there. You could probably go 5 to 9 weight rods with a weight-forward floating line to throw surface lures. Or if you're fishing weed beds or weed edges that are shallow, you can fish a floating line with a long leader and a causer on there and work fairly shallow with that. Surface action, obviously, you want to use mostly a weight forward floating line and a 6-weight to an 8-weight, depending on how big and air resistant your topwater fly is. You want to be able to get it out there effectively. You want to be able to make long casts with it. Any line's going to work. If you go out there with an intermediate line, that's going to work. My preference are these Rio 24-foot density compensated shooting heads.
Okay. What about your terminal tackle setup? What are you doing for leader, tippet? Do you have to use
leader,
dock,
well,
tippet?
You know, when I was doing the presentation at the ISE show in Denver last year, I used to fish a tapered leader that went from like 40-pound mono to 20-pound and then to like a 12 or 15-pound fluorocarbon tip. That's what I used to use. Now I pretty much go a level leader of 10 to 15-pound mono. The reason is in that tank, you could see how much the leader bowed at the knots, and, you know, as your line sank and your fly sank, there's a big bow in between the line. Now I go with a shorter level leader, anywhere from 2 to 6 feet. I try to stay between 3, 4, and 5 feet, somewhere around there, as just a level leader. It's essentially just a tippet from my sinking line. It needs to be strong. One of the things I always tell people when they're on my boat is when you're stripping, keep your rod tip at a slight angle to where you're retrieving your fly. Because these fish, when they take, Dennis McKinney in Colorado stated this perfectly, it's like they're taking it and making a U-turn before you feel them. So they're going the opposite direction really fast when they hit the fly. And this is when their metabolism is up and they're real aggressive. So you'll feel nothing and you'll be stripping. And all of a sudden, and I've broken off on fish like this before, my rod tip's pointing straight at them. There's no give. They'll bust a 10, 15-pound leader, and you just need to make sure your rod tip is off to the side just a little bit, just to give a little bit of give. And strong leaders, I don't believe that they're necessarily leader shy. so I don't let that bother me. If I'm fishing real clear water, real slow presentations, maybe to some less aggressive fish, I'll drop down, maybe 8-pound test, tip it. So mostly in the 0x to 1x to 2x range is what I'm fishing as far as the terminal tippet goes.
Okay. So the idea behind the shorter leader length and kind of a stiffer approach to that is so that the leader goes down basically with the line, and you've got a straight line basically from your rod to your fly without
mm-hmm.
the bow, right?
Yeah, a better contact with your fly, essentially. It's
right.
Keeping everything in line.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. Gary Eaton in Missouri asked about casting. Sounds like he's had some experience throwing large streamers. He says he uses an oval cast or a Belgian cast. Do you have any recommended method? You know, you're talking about, you know, double hauling just to get that big fly out there and, you know, getting some distance. But are there other tips that you have in, as far as casting these larger streamers?
Whatever you can do to get it out there. You know, that's the most important thing. You know, these other casts.
Crossbow?
You know, I've heard of. What's that? Yeah, no.
Is it a crossbow?
You might do that. Carry some bottle rockets or something with you. I don't, as far as, you know, get it out as far as you can, as quickly as you can. And however you can do that, great. If you're whacking yourself in the head, it doesn't feel good. So change up. The oval cast, the Belgian cast, I don't know, my shoulder could take that. I you know, you fish with me. I'm not going to win any fly casting beauty pageants. I kind of go at it. I hack at it. You'll get the hang of this shooting head line. And once you do, it becomes second nature. It doesn't mean I have continuous problems with line at my feet getting tangled up and all that stuff. But
right.
I cast pretty much off to the side, and that's a matter of getting whacked in the head too many times. I'll have my arm off in kind of a sidearm fashion, and I'll shoot the line backwards and, you know, haul it forward. I don't really do like an oval cast or anything. I do keep an open loop. That's important because you got, when you're fishing clousers, you got that extra weight in the fly, and this line in general is not as wieldy as a weight forward floating line. And I'm talking about just the sink tip line. Now, when you're fishing a weight forward floating line with a popper on it, obviously you want to have an open loop with that, but you're going to have to get it tight enough so that the air resistance of that fly is cut, and so you can get that fly back and forth easily and get it landing far enough away from the fly line to make it effective. And while I'm on that subject, let me backtrack and say that leaders that I use for floating lines are typically longer than what I use on the sinking lines. If I'm fishing a floating line with a popper or a floating line with a clouser or some other streamer on it, I'm going to go longer just because that gives me the opportunity on a sinking fly to get it deeper. And on a popper, it allows me to get the fly further away from the fly line. So I can cast to a school of bait fish that are being pushed up without spooking them. I can reach that school with the fly. But back to the casting, as long as you can get your fly out as far as you can, as quick as you can, do whatever you can to make that happen. And hauling is pretty essential no matter what you're using. And
right,
especially
right.
I fish from a boat most of the time, so I think we should clarify that. I'll talk a little bit about shore fishing, where it's also important to get a long cast. But on a boat, it's a little bit different than fishing from shore.
Yeah, now, when I went out with you that day, you gave me one setup I used for a while, and then I went to a heavier setup. And that setup I was able, I think, was that a 9 or was that an 8?
It was most likely an 8.
Yeah, and it just seemed the whole thing seemed to be more well balanced, and I think it
mm-hmm.
was throwing that heavy fly out there was, you know, it was a lot more helpful to have that heavier rod and line
mm-hmm.
to launch that thing out there.
My eight weight with the 300 grain is pretty much it's my wind rod. So if the wind picks up, that's the rod I grab, no matter how shallow or deep I'm going to fish. It is well balanced, and you kind of have to experiment with these lines and your rods and match them up. You know, if you're going to go buy a line, take your rod in and see if you can cast it with a line on it. See if they have some.
Do you ever overload your rods with a heavier line?
Well, and that's somewhat recommended with these lines, as far as the sinking lines go. Like that 300 grain could easily go on a 9 weight, but I have it on an 8 weight. And that's why I think you felt it cast a little bit more different. That 150 grain that I have on a 6 weight is really meant for more of a 5 weight rod, a stiff 5 weight or slow 6 weight, and I have it on a fast 6 weight. So it loads a little bit more different, and I've been talking with Rio about that. There's a line that that I have not tried yet. I believe, I'll have to look up the name of it. They have another line that's intended, has a more supple, thinner running line. It's a little bit easier to load and shoot. I'll have to look that up and get the name of that. But there's Tini makes a similar line. There's a few other manufacturers. I just tend to go with Rio. That's where my experience has been. And as far as rods go, you just need to match them up. And do the best you can to get the right feel.
Yeah. Any other equipment that is valuable to you when you're out on the water looking for wipers?
A boat.
Boat?
Boat, flow tube, kayak, canoe. Really important to me, fishing for wipers, to be mobile and not to have to only concentrate on shallows. They're a pelagic fish, meaning they're an open water fish. They follow pelagic schools of bait fish, so they can be anywhere at any time. In the spring, we find them more tied in to cover, like weeds and brush. But this time of year, midsummer and fall, I find them more out over open water. And like I said before, the whole game is finding them. So if you're mobile and you have a good boat and you have a good electric motor on it that you can move pretty quick with, that makes the game a lot easier.
Well, the other thing that you were using a lot that day when I was out with you was binoculars.
Binoculars, yes, very important, especially if you want to find busting schools of wiper and bait fish. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but you need to be observant the whole time you're on the water. You're looking for anything to give you signs of where these wipers are. Binoculars go a long way to helping with that. If you can see something that's going on across the lake or down the shoreline or out in the middle and you see some splashing going on but you're not sure and you pull out your binoculars, you can see whether those are just maybe bass jumping or a trout rise or carp that notoriously jump on pretty much all the lakes that I'm on out in the middle of the lake. You can start to distinguish that. You can also look for birds, and we'll talk about that as well, and you'll be able to distinguish one bird from another and see if it's a bird that you're interested in that'll help you find the shad, find the wipers. You can also look at other fishermen, I suppose, and find out if they're catching anything. But binoculars are a key element, and we'll talk about this more later, too, is electronics on the boat.
Well, let's just start talking about how we find these. You know, what's our approach?
The approach is finding wiper, period. If you find them, essentially, you can catch them. It doesn't matter
how
so
do we
much.
Found
that, it doesn't matter so much what you're using, as long as you can find them. The main thing when I get out to a lake, and say I haven't been to that lake in a while, and I'm not in on the trends of what's going on with that lake at that particular time, the very basic thing is I'm trying to find bait fish. And you can do that with your electronics, or you can, if you're lucky and it's a glassy day and these bait fish are up on the surface and you can see them boiling the surface, or if you can find wiper busting the surface with these schools of shad or bait fish, you're in luck. You can find them that way. The best way, and 90% of the time I'd say that I'm out, I'm not finding those things. There's a little chop on the water, maybe it's cloudy, maybe it's sunny, but I just can't see these schools of shad. So what I use, the most critical element in finding shad that you can't see with your eyes is to find birds that are feeding on those shad. So around here we have a lot of grebes, and they're a diving bird, and they're constantly on the lookout for shad. So I'm finding grebes that are eating. Some of them will be scratching their back and preening themselves. I'm looking for grebes that are actually feeding, and the more grebes in a cluster, and actually technically it's called a water dance of grebes. I call them a raft sometimes, but I'm looking for as many grebes accumulated in one spot as possible. and I'll go over to that area and I'll start looking for shad schools. Now, if they're in the shallows, that gives me a good idea that there's probably some shad mixed into the shallows, and there'll be wiper mixed into the shallows. And I say grebes because they're diving birds, and they're feeding on these same bait fish that wipers are feeding on. It's really any diving bird that focuses on bait fish like that. You know, loons, cormorants, any kind of diving bird. Pelicans, I look for, they give you a good idea of an area to fish, but they're typically not right on a school of shad, from my experience. They'll give you an area of a lake. Say there's, you know, five pelicans in a cove. That'll give you an idea that there's something going on in that cove that you should go check out. And maybe you find some grebes in that area, and that'll help hone your concentration or your focus. I'm not looking for coots or geese or any other insect-eating bird. It's primarily the fish-eating birds, and that'll give you a clue as to what's going on underneath the water. And when I can't find birds like that, then I'm looking for structure. And that incorporates a whole lot of things. Humps and points and cover, such as weeds, you know, weed edges, break lines, wind currents, and so on. I'm fishing, I'm pretty much blind fishing. That's why making long casts quickly and covering a lot of water is very important, because you end up casting a lot and you're casting blind. It actually makes it a lot more fun, because it's a lot more surprising when you hook a wiper in that situation. You'll make 100 casts, and then all of a sudden some wiper will come and crash your fly, and you almost lose your rod. It makes it a pretty silly event. But whenever I'm there, I'm also thinking about the very basis of the food chain, and that is plankton. So how has the wind or the sunlight affected plankton? And I'm doing a lot more research on that. But if you can get an idea that there's been a strong westerly wind for the last 2 or 3 days or whatever, you can get an idea that the fish and, you know, the plankton and the bait fish and therefore the game fish have been pushed to that leeward side as well. So it's a good place to start. And you can start looking for birds and bait fish in that area.
When you say, a minute ago, when you were talking about structure, all the structure that you kind of mentioned, other than weed lines, is more larger structure and not the kind of structure you'd look for instance, fishing for largemouth bass or something.
Right.
So you're looking, it sounds like, for more open water structure.
Mm-hmm.
Just any kind of difference in the bottom or something, right?
Yeah. The best lessons that you can learn when you're fly fishing for alternate species, warm water species like this, is to go and read some hardware fishing articles. Go read up on some of the books about striper fishing and about smallmouth bass fishing and walleye fishing. And you learn, you know, I just take some of those lessons and apply them to what I do with the fly rod. And a lot of the open water structure can be a little uneasy fishing that kind of stuff at first until you get some confidence in it. But I want to make a distinction between cover and structure. Cover is a term I use mostly to describe like brush and weeds and falling down trees. So like when we're fishing for largemouth bass, you're fishing a lot of cover, something for them to hide in and ambush prey. Structure is more of the contours of the lake itself. And I believe that these wipers, they move a lot. And that's one of the things about these fish that frustrate most people, is they move a lot in a seemingly random pattern. But I don't believe it's totally random. It just seems that way because you can't really see what they're doing. A lot of time when they're cruising around looking for schools of bait fish, they'll be sticking to a contour that's comfortable to them. So follow contours, follow breaks in the contour of the bottom. That's where electronics come into play. And I use my fish finder a lot, not to find wiper, but to find schools of shad and to stick to particular depths and get an idea of what's underneath the boat. So when I'm stuck to blind casting, I can fish an area that has good structure and know that I'm in a reasonably decent spot to find either some scavenging wiper or some wiper that are on shad that are close by that are also using that structure as either a transportation route or they're just kind of hanging out there.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break here, Matt, and when we come back, you can answer more of our folks' questions on strategies for catching wipers. Have you ever dreamed about classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers Online Magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods, to rod maker profiles to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Matt Snyder about wipers on the fly. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Well, continuing on with some strategies here, Matt, you are just talking about the electronics and that kind of location method of finding the shad schools and then following the shad schools. Are there other things, maybe nervous water, is that another indicator of shad activity or wiper activity?
Yes, you know, essentially you're looking for any sign that you can get that there's bait fish around or wiper around. Nervous water, like you look for in salt water, is something that takes a little while to learn to read, but once you are able to observe nervous water, that's a good sign that there's a shad school or bait fish school up close to the surface, and then you might not actually see them breaking the surface, but you see a little bit different ripple, maybe some choppy water. The key is to always be observant. Use whatever you can find to help you locate bait fish and thus wipers. I'm always, always looking around, and so while I'm stripping, I'm always analyzing everything. It actually gets pretty tiring, but the reward is great. This is a fish that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to find them.
I think it's tough for, especially for a lot of trout fishermen that are used to stream or river fishing, where it's much more definitive as to where the fish might be. And I know I feel the same way, and even going out, going to a lake is sometimes like going to the ocean. It looks like this big blank slate. You know, where do I start? And it can be very intimidating, I think, to folks.
It is, you know, and it's actually a little bit easier to go out and fish for, like, smallmouth bass, for instance, because they're structure-oriented fish, and they'll hang out in one spot. Wipers are frustrating because you might find good structure, but they might not come by, but, you know, every 5, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, every hour, or never. You know, it is a little bit intimidating like that. And that's where experience in a lake comes into play. Getting to know a lake and its tendencies comes into play. You just, every time you go someplace new, it's like solving a puzzle. That's why the website Fish Explorer started, is because it's all about putting the pieces of the puzzle together. So observation, you start developing patterns based on what you're observing, and you start applying that, and at the end of the day, hopefully you've put it together and you've caught some wiper. So start with the birds, start with previous conditions, wind, start with water temperatures and trying to understand what's going on ecologically in that lake at that time, and then go from there. Just start casting. If the fly's not in the water, you're not going to catch them. That's the thing.
Well, and the other thing is, when I was out with you, you end up catching other things as well while you're on the search. So it's not all that bad if you catch a walleye or a largemouth.
Well, that's the great thing about it. And that's why I love this technique of focusing on the conditions, focusing on the structure and the cover, and focusing on bait fish schools, because bait fish schools are the most important structure or cover, depends on how you look at it, I guess, in finding wipers. So consider shad schools or bait fish schools a structure and follow them. These wiper will be following them as well. But when you're doing that, when you're focusing on those things instead of actually sight fishing to fish, you're going to find other fish. I mean, when you were out, we caught a crappie and a largemouth bass, and I frequently catch walleye. And the other day I caught an 8-inch perch, fast dripping a clouser. we come across everything. In fact, that's how we just get into so many different types of fish doing that. In fact, about a month ago, we were out on the same lake, and we were seeing busting shad schools or busting schools. We had game fish, and we just assumed they were wiper. started happening all over the lakes. We started casting into them. Ended up catching walleye. They were walleye actually pushing these shad up, and not wiper. But, I mean, some good-sized walleye, 18 to 24 inches. And it's just what you get into when you're concentrating on those types of things. You find all sorts of fish, and they're all fun. These walleye sometimes put up a bigger fight than the wiper. I've had some walleyes really tear me up. And that's probably the most surprising fish. When I talk to people at the boat ramp, and they say, well, what'd you catch? I said, well, we caught some walleye and some wiper. And, you know, they say, well, were you using bottom bouncers? What were you doing? No, I was using a fly, and they're floored. Most people are more surprised that we catch walleyes on the fly than anything else. And that's
right.
True, but they're doing the same thing these wipers are doing. They'll go and sit on humps down in 25, 30 feet of water, whatever. They'll do that same thing. But they're also, they're predators, and they'll be up chasing bait fish as well, just like a lot of other fish.
Right. Well, we've got several more questions here from our listeners that I'd like to hit. So let's see if we can, running out of time here a bit, so we'll have to move through these quickly now. But Frank, up in Lanceville, B.C. again, can these fish be fished from the shoreline, or should someone new finding and fishing wipers hire a guide in a boat?
I'll try to answer these as quick as I can because we're in the speed round now.
Yeah.
So you cut me short if I go on. I mean, this is just so exciting with fish to talk about. I get carried away. But shore fishing limits you in that you just can't get out to the open water. It doesn't mean you can't catch them. I know a lot of guys that only shore fish with fly rods and catch a lot of wiper. It just matters where they are at any given day, at any given time. If they're shallow, especially in the spring when they're taking advantage of fry and bait fish in shallows, in weeds and weed edges like that, it's a great place to go fish. Fish the side where the wind is pushing the waves up against, you know, fish dams where you might have some scavenging fish, as well as wipers pushing shad up against the dam rocks. But you can, as long as you're mobile and you're willing to wait it out and go there and maybe not find anything, the important thing is to learn the lake. Walk the shorelines. You might end up blind casting a lot. Take note of where you hooked into wiper and develop the points where you're successful and go back to those points. If you're looking to go out and catch wiper, obviously getting out in the water is the best thing, in my opinion.
Right.
So if you have the money and you want to actually shorten the learning curve a little bit, take a guide who knows what he's doing. Even if it's a hardware fishing guide, a guy that trolls or fishes spin gear, tell them you want to go out and fly fish for wiper, because as long as they can find them, you can catch them with a fly rod.
Yeah.
They might not know how to tell you how to do that, but at least you get out in the water, and if they're familiar with wipers, they'll know how to find them.
Right.
So shore fishing is a little bit limiting, but it's definitely, definitely possible. It's just a matter of the any given day, any given time.
Hey, we've got a couple of questions that are interrelated. One, Mike in Cedar City, Utah, asks, is night fishing effective for wipers? And then we've got Mike Engelhart in Pittsburgh, who talks about that he's done well with hybrids in the spring during the day and at night during the summer, and they do okay during those times, but find it almost impossible to target them any times other than that. So I guess it's kind of, you know, twofold. Can you get them at night? And when they're off, where do you, you know, what do you do then?
And that's kind of what I'm talking about is when they're off, because they're mostly off. I mean, you can't find them busting the surface all the time. And so if you're dedicated to wiper, you're going to be fishing a lot of times when you're not seeing them bust. That's exactly right. In the springtime, you can find them all day, and they might be busting. In the fall, you can see that, too. They'll be any time of day when the water temperatures are cooler. Summertime, they tend to push deeper to stay at their comfort level. And the shad, they'll follow the shad, so wherever the shad are, you'll find them. This time of year, dawn and dusk is great. I don't do a whole lot of night fishing for them. That can be effective, especially with topwater stuff or densely tied flies that push a lot of water subsurface so that the fish can use their lateral lines to find it, or on full moons when they can actually use their vision to find the fly. Thing is, in the summertime, the shad schools and the plankton actually move up into the upper column. So on a glass day right now, middle of the day, you can go out on the lake and see these shad schools all over the place, kind of just brushing the surface. Unless they're spooked, you're not going to see of feverish activity out of them. So you're looking for the ones that are scared. But you can catch them. It's one of the biggest myths that it's only a low-light fish. It's not a low-light fish. They prefer probably less UV rays. And most of the time, you see busting activity in the morning, like at dawn and at dusk, and, you know, very low light conditions, very cloudy days. But they're feeding all day long, and probably all night long, too, mostly all day. They're voracious feeders, and they move a lot, and they have to eat a lot. So you can catch them all day long, as long as you know where to look. Night fishing, like I said, could be good, probably is good. I just don't do a whole lot of it.
Yeah. Tom in Roswell, Georgia asks, how deep can you effectively fish flies?
Well, these, you know, you can get a 500-grain density compensated sinking line. And I, Dave Colson, who's one of our field editors, fishes for lake trout, 30, 40 feet of water with that line.
Really? Okay.
From the surface down to, you know, he fishes pretty slow to get down that deep. But you can fish, I can fish effectively with my 6-weight and 8-weight with that 150-grain and 300-grain line. I can fish anywhere from, you know, 1 foot from the surface of the water down to 12, 15 feet. The great thing is about fly fishing with these types of setups is that you can use one fly, you know, like a clouser, and fish these different depths. You don't have to keep switching up like a spin fisherman would have to switch up different baits to fish different levels. You pretty much use one fly and this setup, and depending on how you vary your retrieve, whether it's a slow retrieve and you're doing a lot of pauses and letting it sink, or if you're doing a fast retrieve, you can fish different sections of the water column that way.
Okay, well, talking about retrieves, you said mm-hmm. fast, and then you said slow with a drop. How do you know which one to use when?
Change it up all the time. Change is one of the most important things on a daily basis that I do. We're always switching it up, always switching the retrieves. Obviously, if you're fishing deeper, you fish slower. If you want to fish higher, you strip faster. But usually it's somewhere in between. I used to fish fast all the time. That's what people, I think, associate mostly with this type of fishing, is you find a busting school of wipers on bait fish, and you just put a cast over them. This is how I got hooked anyway. And you strip as fast as you can. You can't strip it too fast, and they just come and blast your fly. And that's fun. That's a lot of fun. But you can also, like I do a lot in the fall, is fish that 300 grain and find a shad school and drop it straight through and take a twitch as soon as it hits the water so they know it's alive. Let it drop a few seconds. Take a couple more twitches to let them know it's alive, and then count 5 seconds. Take a couple twitches, count another 5 seconds. So I'm pretty much working that thing vertically down through the shad school. A lot of time the big boys are down below the shad schools or the baitfish schools, and they'll take it as if it's a dying shad or an injured shad. And when that take occurs and you're just fishing this kind of slack line that's free-falling, you won't feel the take so much like you would if you're fast stripping. A lot of times in the fall, it's like they just kind of mouth it, and you'll feel a little tap. And when that happens, you got to make sure to rear back on the hook set. And I take a strip and a hook set at the same time. I mean, it looks like I'm landing, hooking a shark or something like that, but you need to, because you need to take out any kind of curve in your line, take out that slack, and actually bury the hook. Bury your retrieves all the time. And they might take on, they might be more willing to take it on pause. They might like chasing fast strips, but change it up.
And they'll take it moving very fast with a fast strip, or they'll take it on when it's dropping as well, it sounds like, from what you've described.
Yeah. These guys don't mess around. You pretty much, if they're on fire, you can't strip it too fast. You can't keep it away from them. They're gonna chase it down. But there's other times when slow retrieves and long pauses are effective as well.
Okay. Now, once you hook up, let's say we've got one on, do they run deep? Do they run long? Do they just go sit on the bottom? How do they act?
These guys are just mussels. They're just white striped mussels, and they'll just take off wherever they want to go. They'll go deep, and they'll go sideways. They'll go under the boat. They'll do everything they can. They're a pretty fierce fighting fish, and I'm sure they. I haven't had them jump a whole lot. That's the only thing. But otherwise, they do everything in the book.
Okay. What about tips on fighting them?
Fighting them. Yeah, like I said,
especially
before,
when we're talking about, you know, people that are used to trout fishing and so forth.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than trout. Having a fighting butt is really important, so you can put that into your hip and lean on the rod. The most important thing when fighting them is don't worry about getting them to the reel. If they're big enough to take you to the reel, great. They're going to strip up that line real quick, and they're going to snap it, and they're going to all of a sudden start taking drag. I've lost more fish trying to get a fish to the reel, so I don't bother anymore. I hand strip them in right now, unless they actually force me to the reel. But when you're fighting them, take every chance they give you to turn them and get them in closer. They'll take runs that you can't do anything about, so you just let them go. Keep a, obviously like any fish, keep a stiff line. I fish a barbless fly all the time. Never had any problems with them losing fish. I don't believe you need the barbs. As long as you keep a taut line and you play the fish correctly, you'll have no problem with a barbless fly. And just lean on them whenever they give you a chance. And when they don't, when they've got a mind of their own, let them go. And just don't try to get them to the reel unnecessarily.
And when you say lean on them, are you fighting them more like a saltwater fish, kind of down and dirty, or as a person would fight a trout and holding the rod high, like so many do?
Well, you don't want to bully them. I pretty much have my rod down like saltwater. I have my rod down at the side, and I keep it fairly close to the water level. You don't want a whole lot of bend in your line, so if you've got a fish hooked off to the left, you don't want your line bending off to the right. I keep my rod tip low. And I keep it buried into my hip, and I'll try to lean on them, meaning pull the rod. I'm not going to horse them in. I think that's not as good for fish as much as letting them fight too much. But you want to get them in quickly, not totally green, but not totally spent either.
Right.
You just want to get them in a reasonable amount of time. And so just take every chance that you can to lean on them. And if you're fishing a 10- to 15-pound test, tip it. Then you shouldn't have any problem turning their heads, at least for the fish in the 5 to 10-pound range or less.
And one final question. Any particulars on handling or releasing the fish once you bring them to the boat?
Well, I'm big on handling fish as little as possible, and since I've released almost all these fish, you can lip these fish because they don't have teeth. If I'm going to lift one up for a photograph, I pretty much remove the fly while the fish is in the water, and then I'm going to support it with both hands and lift it up for the photograph and then release it right away. And they're pretty spunky. They'll get right back in the water and swim off just as fast as they came in. Most of the time, though, if I don't catch a fish that's big enough for a photograph, I'll just release the hook in the water and let them go without even bringing them out. Try to take as much care with them as possible.
Okay, good. Well, unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up. Time flies when you're having fun, but when we return, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. And if you answer the question correctly, you might win Chad Shields' Fly Box, 14 bass flies. So stay tuned. Just as Lance Armstrong says, live strong, there is a fly fishing organization that helps women battle cancer to fish on. It's Reeling and Healing Midwest. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature, and support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn how you can support their retreats, visit reelingandhealingmidwest.org. So that's Reeling, R-E-A-L-I-N-G-A-N-D, healingmidwest.org. Or call 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find our link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from this show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late. Make sure you do so for the next show because we're always giving away some great prizes. Now, if you're the lucky winner tonight, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your gift. So first, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. To learn more about the FFF, go to www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. So I will check our database here, and we have James Camel. James Camel in Washington, D.C. So congratulations, James, on winning that 3-year membership, and always a great organization to support. So enjoy that. And next, we have the 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. And our winner there is Mike Harrell in North Carolina. Mike Harrell in North Carolina. So congratulations to both of you gentlemen, and enjoy those prizes. Well, now we need to answer a question. You need to answer a question. And if you do, we'll be giving you Chad Shields Bass Streamer Pro Fly Box, which includes 4 Mad Mud Dog Salamanders, 4 Shield Shiners, 2 Deep Swimming Frogs, 2 Sugar Daddy Craws, and 2 Producers, 14 flies in all. And these are great for large and smallmouth bass. You can find his patterns at www.emergefishing.com, and you'll also see some videos there of how these things look and work under the water in his video library. So, now, question. And Matt, you got to help me out on this. Make sure they get it right. Just go to our homepage, use that text box there, put in the answer to your question, put your name and location. Got to have both of those in there. Qualify the first person that submits the correct answer. We'll win this fly box. So let's see. I'll make it easy on you guys tonight. Last time it was a bit harder, but I'll make it easy. What is the primary food source that Matt talked about tonight that the wipers love? So first person in gets that. Oh, somebody was ready. Somebody was really ready. Bill Butt, Springfield, Missouri. Maddie says shad. Is that it?
Yeah, at least here. That's right. You know, bait fish in general, but gizzard shad is definitely what I look for most here.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I believe Bill, if this is the same Bill Butts, is a big white bass fisherman out in Missouri. So, and in fact, we're looking forward to possibly having him on our show in the future. So, I think he probably knows a bit about this, too. So anyway, well, congratulations, Bill. Please send me your email address via the same method you just did so that I can contact you, get your address, and get those flies out to you. And I'm sure you'll enjoy them there. In fact, I used one of those the day we were out and caught a largemouth with Matt. So we've used those together. Well, Matt, hey, thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy fishing schedule to join us tonight. So
I wish I could be fishing more right now. I've got so many things going on. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I've got a special page for just this interview on our website. At the bottom of the website, there's a link, and it's near the very bottom. It's a white link. It says Wiper Think Card. It's inspired by a legendary muskie fisherman that I like a lot, Dick Pearson. And it's things to think about when you're out in the water. There's also a nice video on there of how not to catch wiper. And I think you'll see who that is when you go visit that.
Oh, it's not me, is it?
I don't know. You'll have to see. It's a special little video clip that I don't think
I better go check this out.
The subject knows that I took it, so
Wiper. Okay. Well, thanks. And again, that link's at the bottom of your homepage on fishexplorer.com, right?
It says Wiper Think Card, exactly.
Okay,
fishexplorer.com.
Great. Well, we appreciate that. Everybody enjoy that. Well, our next broadcast will be on August 20th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. On that show, we'll be interviewing Phil Rowley. And our topic for the show will be fly fishing still waters with chronomids. Phil Rowley is well known for mastery of lake fishing. And on this show, you'll learn Phil's secrets and techniques for fly fishing for trout with chronomids and other hot flies that he uses. Well, we'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Keeney's Fly Shop, Power Fibers, and rogue anglers for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.